Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Lyle Editorial Review. The Lyle is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Lyle Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Lyle Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Lyle Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Lyle Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on advertising when we come back. Well, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our forefathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words that tell us, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." But back in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced into our economic system our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. They gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills, and they gave us clad coinage in place of silver coin. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have now gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, that's another of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School that I conduct twice a year here at the law school. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine while you're there and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about this thing of music in the supermarket. And I said, when we closed in the last program, I said, you know, that music is an advertisement. It's a design. It's a psychological war that we are waging against you, because we can control you and we can control what you buy with music. Now, of course, you're sitting there saying, "No, you can't. You cannot make me buy anything by playing music." Well, okay, listen up and let me tell you how this thing works. It is true that we can't put on a particular record, you know. I mean, I can't put on a Beatles record like Yellow Submarine and make you buy chocolate eclairs. So when you say you can't make me buy anything by playing music, if that's what you're referring to, that's correct. And I'll concede that to you. But by playing music in the store, I can change your mood. And if I can change your mood, then if I can change the mood of 100 customers in my store, I can make them stay longer in my store. Or I can make them jaded and they'll say, "God, I can't wait to get out of here." So here's what we do. And we test this scientifically. I mean, we're not just talking off the top of our heads, kids. When we sign contracts with music companies like Music, or Muzak, I guess is what, the way we pronounce it. When we sign those contracts, we're not throwing money away for good purpose. Don't ever believe for a minute that when you walk into a store and you're listening to music in the background over there, that guy's spending that music because he just wants to make your shopping experience more enjoyable. He knows that by spending that money on music that he's going to make more sales than he would if he didn't have that music in there. Now, some stores don't have music because the music does not influence people to buy those products. And so the stores that you see or hear the music in are those kinds of businesses where that music helps them sell that product. So a lot of times when you call some store, you will be listening to a continual line of advertisements. For instance, I'll call Nixa Hardware. And Nixa Hardware plays music. They play Elvis Presley music. And they'll play not the whole song. They just play an excerpt from one of Elvis's songs. And then they will put on an ad. And they'll say, "Well, Nixa Hardware is the area's oldest seed processing company." And they'll tell us about their seeds. And then you'll listen, and there'll be a little Elvis Presley on there. And then from that Elvis Presley, they go into another ad, and they'll say, Nixa Hardware is also the area's number one small engine repair station for lawnmowers and, you know, this and that and weed eaters and then blah, 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 you know, and they go on. And then they'll play another little piece of music. Now, they're not doing that for no good reason. I mean, you know, you can call some people. No, call the IRS and see how much music you listen to. call the telephone company to complain about your bill and see how much music you get. You just get stony deaf silence, and once in a while somebody comes on there and it says, you know, your call is being taken in order. You're number 87. If you want to stay on the line, have at it. You know, they're about as rude and obnoxious as they can get. Now, those are the kind of people that don't care whether you stay on the line or not. In fact, they would rather you hung up. We really don't want to talk to you today anyway. Nick's the Hardware is totally different. Boy, they want to talk to you. So when you call them, that music over there keeps you on the line because you like the music. And you like the little blurbs, the little advertising blurbs over there telling you about what Nixa Hardware does and how we appreciate your business and how you're the greatest thing since sliced white bread and we value our customers and blah, 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 until some guy can come on the line. He comes on the line and says, hey, this is Nixa Hardware. What can I do to help you? Meeks Lumber does the same thing. I always like to call Meeks and Nixa Hardware. They're just so pleasant. All right, now there's a psychological reason behind that. Now, we know that when we come on the air, or when we put out an advertisement, there's a certain response that goes with that ad. And people don't come on the Super Bowl and pay $1 million for 60 seconds for no good reason, kids. You can rest assured that when somebody's writing a check for $1 million to get on the Super Bowl advertising schedule over there, that they expect to get that $1 million back and another 10, 20, or $30 million worth of sales in addition to that $1 million. For every dollar we spend in advertising, we expect to get something back for it. In fact, we expect to get back more than the advertising cost. And obviously, it has to be that way. Picture this. I spend $100 on advertising, and the advertising produces $50 worth of sales. Is that effective advertising? Would you do that? Would you spend $100 to make $50? Well, let me assure you that Walmart won't do that either. And neither will Ford or General Motors or anybody else whose IQ is anything higher than 65. In fact, if I spend $100 and I make $100 worth of sales, that's not effective. I wouldn't even spend $100 to make $100. Now, in business, we have what we call a bottom line, and this bottom line is measured in what we call keystone markups. And so when one businessman is talking to another, he may casually mention over lunch, what's your mark? And you'll say, well, I got one mark, or I'm working at a half a mark, or one third, or I'm working at two, or three, or five, or, you know. And so a keystone is called a markup. If you buy a product for a dollar and you sell it for two, it's got one mark in it. That's a keystone markup. If you buy a product for a dollar and sell it for $2, then it's got two marks in it. If you're in jewelry, for instance, jewelry has three marks. And that's because jewelry doesn't sell well. You know, you just don't walk into the jewelry store, you know, and plunk down $30,000 and walk out with a diamond ring for the old lady tonight. So once in a while, you might go in and you might buy something, you know, in a jewelry store. But jewelry stores have to have high markups because they have low volume. On the other hand, when you go over to the 7-Eleven store and you fill up your car, the markup in a gallon of gasoline is about a dime. Well, it might be 20 cents now because it's used to be about a dime. It was 6 cents. When gasoline was $1 a gallon, it used to be 6 cents when I was in the trade. So it's about 6%. So see, if we had $2 gasoline, we should be making about 12 cents a gallon. And it's got a low markup in it, but it's got a high volume. You know, the station is probably selling 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, 10,000 gallons of gasoline a day. So, you know, if this location is selling 10,000 gallons a day times 0.12, they're making $1,200 a day off of the gas pumps. But stores don't have gasoline pumps in their stores to sell gasoline because there's no money in it. So when you go into the 7-Eleven store, 67%, two-thirds of everything that they sell in there, two-thirds of their volume comes out of the cooler. That's the beer and the soda pop that they're selling out of the cooler, not the milk. Now, I'm talking about the cooler. They're talking about beer and soda pop, 67%. Now, it may be 67% in addition to or included in would be tobacco and cigarettes and stuff like that. So when I was in that business, why it was 67% came out of the cooler, and I, as I recall, it was around 15 or 20% that came out of tobacco. Now, I was in a Circle K store, and the store is full of canned corn. I mean, there's, you know, if you want to buy a can of creamed corn, it's in there. You know, if you want to buy this, that, or something else, it's in there. But that stuff just sits there for years. Nobody goes into a 7-Eleven store or Circle K store to buy a can of cream corn. And we even had lettuce and a few other little thingies back there in the back. See, what we're trying to do is to demonstrate to you that we're a mini grocery store. But we're not here to sell lettuce and canned corn. We're here to sell beer and cigarettes. And why do we have gasoline? That's to draw you in. See, you have to have gasoline. And so you come into the store to pay for your gasoline. And when you come in the store, we know that a certain number of you are going to go back to the cooler and buy a six-pack of beer and a pack of Marlboros on your way out. So now you got your beer, cigarettes, gasoline, you get in your car and you drive off. And the average sale back in the 1970s when I was doing it was $3.67 per customer. And so we're looking for volume of customers coming through the store. We need 500 customers a day to come through that store. And we're watching what we call the traffic count. Well, now, the reason that we play music in the store is to keep you in the store longer or to hurry you out of the store. So when we have a slack period and we don't have very many customers, we play slow music. And that keeps you in the store longer. Why is that? It's just psychological. And we know that the longer you stay in the store, the more you will buy. So if you come into a store and you spend 10 minutes in there, you're going to buy $3.67. But if we can keep you in the store for 12 minutes, you're going to spend $4.04. If we can keep you in the store for 15 minutes, you're going to spend $5.10. See what we're doing there, kids? The longer you spend in the store, the more money you're going to spend. Now, what if we're really in a hurry? And this is rush hour. And there are times in a convenience store when you have rush hour. And when you have a rush hour, which is at noon, when people are coming in to buy sandwiches and things like that, we play fast music. Fast music has a psychological impact upon you. And now you want to move faster. It puts you in the mood. Come on, hurry up. Let's go. Get with it. You see, and that's what we want. We don't want you in the store for 10 or 12 minutes. We want you into the store and out of the store as rapidly as possible because we got people lined up here. And we need to move these people through. And the more people we can move through, see, I would rather move 100 people through in 60 minutes at 367 than I would to move 25 people through in 15 minutes. It's true, I get more money out of each customer the longer you stay in there. But my average is always going to be 367, so I want to get more people through. Get that sandwich, get that Coke, and get out of here. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. Now, that's the way we do that. Now, that's the purpose for that music. Now, maybe you thought we were doing you a favor when we were playing music in there, but no, we're not. That music has a purpose. That music is advertising. That music is psychological. That music is designed to get more money out of you and to put more money into our pocket. And so I share that with you because that's the way the game is played. So if I walk in the store, I go, uh-oh. Let's see, what's the pitch of the music? Oh, my God, they want me to get in and out of here as rapidly as possible, so let me hurry. Now, there's another thing in here that we do in the store, and it's the way we place our products, You see, when you come into the store, where do we put the cooler? In the back of the store. Where do we put the beef jerky? Right up by the checkout counter. And that's because there are certain things that are in here that are what we call impulse buys. Chewing gum, candy bars, beef jerky. These are called impulse buys. And if we were to put those things way in the back of the store over in the corner, we'd never sell any of it. That's like those gossip papers. What do they call it? The National Enquirer and the Star and stuff like that. Right up by the checkout counter. So walk into the store and you'll look at the placement. Where is the sugar? In the back of the store. Where is the flour? In the back of the store. Where is the milk? In the back of the store. Where you have to walk 3,000 steps from the front door to the back of the store over in the corner where you're going to find the sugar, the flour, and the milk. Because after all, that's why you came to the store. You came to the store to buy sugar, flour, and milk. And you will go through and you will seek that out. You didn't go to the store to buy chewing gum, candy bars, and beef jerky. Nobody goes into a big supermarket to buy the National Enquirer. Now, while you're in the supermarket, we're going to play slow music to keep you in there as long as possible. So we play the elevator music. That's to keep you calm and sedated so that you'll walk around in more aisles, spend more time in the store, put more things into your basket. And boys and girls, we time people. I mean, we have spent years studying you people. And we know what makes you tick. And we know what colors that we want to put on our labels and on our packages. We know how to scientifically design packages. And so we test that. We'll put yellow and red on a package, and we'll put that on the shelf. And then right next to it, we'll put green and red. And then right next to it, we'll put black and white. And when you come in there, you'll always buy the yellow and red, or the bright colors first and then on down. But then that doesn't always apply to all products. And so some products have bright colors on them, and some products have dull colors on them. So on chocolate, we put black. Why is that? You're going to go over and pick up a package of Oreos that's colored white? No. No, that's because we're going to sell 10 times more chocolate cookies than vanilla cookies, and if we put that package in white, it sends a subliminal message that these are vanilla cookies. You don't want to buy vanilla cookies. You want to buy chocolate. So we paint those black, and we put them over here, and you're going to buy those cookies because they're black, because you want chocolate, because we're going to sell about three or four times more chocolate than we are vanilla. And all of this is very carefully and very scientifically rehearsed, and it's all part of advertising, kids. It's all a part of manipulation. It's all a part of we're going to get more money out of you. And here's the way we're going to do it. All right, so there's another thing that we use here in advertising called the closing question. And remember, advertising takes a lot of different forms. It can take the form of a business card or a TV or newspaper, bulletin boards, books, speeches, radio. It can be an article in a magazine. It can be by word of mouth. It can be the music you're listening to or the package that you're looking at. Everything is carefully and scientifically designed to appeal to you to spend your money here. And we leave no stones unturned, kids. No stone is unturned. And we teach our salesmen how to use that advertising to the greatest possible advantage. So the salesman tells you what you want to hear. And we teach these salesmen. We put them through school, and we teach them the psychology behind sales. Here's why people buy this product, and here's the way we have to pitch it and sell it, whether you're selling encyclopedias or Ford automobiles. We train those salesmen. They ask the right questions. They give you the right information. They flatter you with the right terms and the right words. That's why salesmen are such nice guys. Everybody loves a salesman. Salesmen are all nice guys. They're all con men. Everybody loves a con man. So let's understand what the motivation and the purpose is. You know, I could be a real nice con man salesman, and I could tell you the truth if I put my mind to it. Or I could be a real nice con man salesman, and I could come in here and lie to you and steal your money. Which would you rather me do? Lie to you and steal, or tell you the truth and sell you something that you can use and really need? You know, there's sometimes when a sale comes up that you don't need this. Let me give you an illustration of that. The Bible is a wonderful illustration of an honest salesman. And this guy, Jesus of Nazareth, really wasn't his name. For all you holy name people out there, I don't want to insult you here. But, you know, for most Christians, you know, it's sweet Jesus. And so here's Jesus in Matthew chapter 13. And here's an example of an honest salesman. Jesus has just given a parable. And there's a statute in here. It says that Jesus never spoke to a crowd of people without talking to them in parables. He always had this parable. And Mrs. Ray, the Sunday school teacher, you know, when I was in Sunday school, I went twice. And one of the lessons was on this very parable right here in the Lutheran Sunday school. Mrs. Ray, the Sunday school teacher, said Jesus spoke in parables because those poor farmers in those days weren't educated, and they didn't go to school like you lucky boys and girls. See, I was a lucky little boy because I went to school. And these people were not lucky little boys because they didn't go to school. And they were just dumb, ignorant farmers. See? Never could quite figure out why farmers are dumb and why farmers are ignorant, but we are. All of us farmers are dumb and ignorant, and all you people in the city know that. I'm a farmer. And all you people in the city say, oh, that poor man. He's poor, he's ignorant, and he's dumb. So I just wanted to share with you people there in the city that I know quite a few farmers, and, you know, by and large, you know, we're fair to middle and we're well-educated, and we can add and subtract. And while we bitch about farm prices all the time, you'll notice that we're all driving new dually pickups somehow. Anyway, this Mrs. Ray, she's telling us about how dumb and ignorant these farmers are. And Jesus spoke in parables to these farmers so that they could better understand his message, and so they could go to heaven and be with Jesus. You know, when you're 10, 11 years old, makes all the sense in the world. It's like watching Nova, you know, as they're explaining to you why the trade towers fell down. It's because there was a hot fire up there. And, you know, when you're not a metallurgist and you're not an engineer, you don't really know anybody. Well, it's a pretty good story. Yeah, it's as good a story as anybody that I've heard so far. And that was a pretty good story when I was a kid, but I went a step further. In fact, in verse 10, the disciples came up to Jesus and they said, hey, boss. His disciples came, verse 10, and said to him, why do you speak to these people in parables? Very same question that Mrs. Ray answered for us in the Sunday school class. The disciples, they didn't know why he was speaking in parables either. So they came up and asked him. And so here's the Messiah. He answered and said to them, because it's given unto you to know the mystery of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it's not given. There's an honest salesman. Hey, you know, this is a product that I'm selling. I'm here selling the kingdom of heaven. And to some of these people out here, this kingdom of heaven is not a good product for them. And so I'm speaking in parables so they can't understand what it is I'm selling, so they won't buy it. This isn't a good product for them. And so I took a page out of that and I said, you know, not everything that's out here in the marketplace should be sold to everybody. You know, for instance, I'm not so sure that it's a good idea that 16-year-old kids learn to drive in a Corvette or a 280Z. I think that kids that are learning how to drive probably ought to learn how to drive in a four-door sedan, four-cylinder, underpowered. I mean, that's the way I learned how to fly airplanes. You know, I didn't start off, you know, in a Comanche. I started off in an Aronca Champ, you know, an airplane that flies about 80 miles an hour and, you know, downwind. Has about, I don't know, 50 or 75, I guess at 85 horsepower. That's what it was, 85 horsepower. Continental engine. And you got out there and you had to start it by hand. You had to prop it. You had to grab that propeller and spin it around. Didn't even have a starter on it. Okay, now that's where we start people. You know, when we start flying airplanes, we don't train people to fly airplanes in 747 simulators, for crying out loud. We teach them in an Aronca Champ. And so here's Jesus. He comes along and says, you know, this kingdom of God thing ain't good for everybody. I know that's kind of offensive to you Christians out there, but I just thought I'd tell you that's what your boss, sweet Jesus, told you. It's in Matthew 13. I didn't write this, by the way, so don't get mad at me. Send me an email and you'll tell me I'm the Antichrist now. So he says, he answered and said unto them, because it is given to you to know the mystery of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it isn't given. And he goes on, it's a citation from Isaiah 6, verses 9 through 13. I'll let you read it for yourself. I just wanted to point out to you, there's an honest salesman. He says, you know, this isn't a good product for you. I remember I went up to the airport one day, Gene Rothlin, he had an old AT-6 from World War II for $3,000. I mean, here's this great big monster airplane out there. I think it weighed 6,000 pounds, 3 tons, 6,000 pounds, AT-6. Cruised 180 miles an hour and burned 35 gallons an hour. Which, you know, when gasoline was 30, 40 cents a gallon, you know, it wasn't at the end of the world. But this airplane, you know, for a kid, and I'm just a fresh kid. I'm out here still. I'm solo by now, but, you know, I'm just a fresh kid. And I said to Rothlin, I said, have you still got that airplane? Yeah. Did you want to sell that airplane? And he said, yeah, I want to sell it. And I said, well, I'd like to buy it. And he said, oh, no. Not you, Gordon. No. I need to sell that airplane, but I don't need to sell that airplane to you. And I said, well, why not? And he said, because you'll kill yourself in it. You'll just kill yourself in that airplane. That's more airplane than you can handle, son. God, I'm glad he didn't sell me that airplane. I think the guy was right. I think I was 19 years old. I think old Gene was right. You know, he was an old-timey flight instructor, and he'd been around the block for a while, you know, and he knew how to fly airplanes, and he'd been training people to fly airplanes for years and years, and he's got this smart-ass, pimply-faced punk, you know, saying, I want to buy that AT-6. Boy, did he do me a favor. So I didn't buy the airplane, obviously, because he wouldn't sell it to me, so I went and bought something else. Now, he did sell me an airplane, but he sold me something that I could handle. You know, something more in line with where I was in my training program. And that's where Jesus is. He'd like to sell you the program over here, but he doesn't want to sell this to just everybody. This is a program that has to be sold to people that can handle it. You know, that's like money. You know, money in the hands of some people becomes destructive, you know, especially bankers. You know, bankers get hold of money. Those guys can't control that kind of power. As evidence to buy, just take a look at the world around you. Can the bankers handle money? Can the politicians handle power? I mean, come on, kids. The world isn't in the condition that it's in because bankers can handle money or politicians can handle power any more than a 19-year-old kid can handle a big, fast airplane. You know, it's just the way life is. And so Jesus comes along and says, hey, listen, kids, you know, there's some of you kids that can handle this and some of you can't. And those of you that can't handle it, we don't want to sell you that. All right, so that being the case, not everybody who comes onto the car lot should be driving out of here in this 280Z. You know, some of you people that come onto the car lot should be driving out of here in a big old SUV or a station wagon because you got a wife and five kids. You know, a guy comes onto the parking lot or onto the car lot and he's over here kicking the tires, you know, on a Corvette. You know, I can see this is a guy that's going through midlife crisis. This is some guy, you know, that thinks he's missed the brass ring. He's got a wife and five kids. He needs this Corvette like he needs six thumbs. But you know, that salesman's going to sell him that Corvette if he can. He's going to sell him what he sees the hot button issue is. And then I say, that's not right. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here, kids. Hang on. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Remember, The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. And we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to endorse and recommend the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, or they're religious, or they're economic, or they're sectarian, or they're racial, or they're ethnic partisans. And their viewpoint is not 100% endorsed by us, and vice versa. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, so don't blame anybody but me. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. And the reason we say that is because we buy this time, you know, and we put this on at our expense, and a lot of times the advertisers or the sponsors or the radio station. My God, they listen to this and they just cringe. Cringe. But, you know, that we pay for our time and they sell us the time and we thank them very much for it. So we have to put this disclaimer on here. Don't get mad at the station or the network or the advertiser and get angry with them over something that I say. Get mad at me. Send me an email and tell me what a jerk I am, would you? For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to the website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, we're talking about advertising. I'm an old advertiser, and I'm an old insurance company claims adjuster, too. I'm a con man, and I don't deny that. You have to be a con man to be a salesman, and that's because people don't buy from people they don't like. Let's just be real about it. You know, you buy from people because you like them. That salesman was a hell of a nice guy. What I'm trying to alert you to is that salesmen who are hell of a nice guy, or nice guys, oftentimes lie. In fact, I pointed this out a little earlier. 25% of everything that comes out of my mouth ain't true. And I work real hard, boys and girls. I'm an old man now, and I don't need to lie to you anymore. I used to lie and cheat and steal. And then I woke up one day and said, no, why am I doing this? Do I really need to lie, cheat, and steal from people in order to make a living? Or could I do it differently? Could I just tell this guy the truth? It's kind of like reading Mad Magazine. I'm an old Mad. I never did subscribe, but I like to read Mad Magazine once in a while because it's indicative of the character of human nature. It's just like Al Capp's Little Smooths, you know. They just are indicative of human nature. And we're all motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. The salesman is motivated by the same five motivators that you and I and everybody else is. We all suffer from the same problem, human nature. George Bush is probably a nice guy. He just suffers from vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And it's just a little more pronounced and it's a little more out of control than in the average run-of-the-mill person out here. That's what our problem is. And then he gets in power, you know, political power, and he's got his finger on the button, and that ought to scare the hell out of all of us. Now, God was a little better qualified to handle nuclear power. You know, he created the sun and galaxies out there. Now, so far, he hasn't nuked us, and he's done a pretty good job of controlling the sun and the stars and planets around us. And every time I watch one of these NOVA programs, you know, and they're talking about, or, you know, one of these disaster programs where this asteroid is about to come and hit the United States or hit the world, you know, hit the Earth, and they're talking about going up there and nuking it or something like that, God, that just scares the living hell out of me. And we're getting to a point here in history where I'm not sure that these people can handle the powers that they've got. Of course, if you're young, it doesn't bother you yet, because when you're 19, you have eternal life. You know, when you get to be old like I am, you know, you're down to your last 2 or 3 years, you know. You can start counting the days. All right, now, I was breaking in here to some of these real neat little parts of the story here in advertising, like the closing question. We ask you things like, do you want to pay by cash or check? Got that? You want to pay by cash or check? And that's called the closing question. And we're trained to ask you this question because the minute you say by check, you have just psychologically, just subconsciously bought the product. Okay, so we make our presentation. We have to overcome all of your objections. So when you say, well, I can't afford this, then we come back and we say, but it's only $50 a month. And then when you say, well, $50 a month is a bunch, Jesus, that's only a donut and a cup of coffee every day. So what I'm telling you, give up your donut and cup of coffee down at Winchell's and buy my product. Okay, so I overcome your objections, and I get you down to the closing question. I get you to buy this product that you don't need, can't use, shouldn't have, and probably bad for you. And that puts a commission in my pocket so I can go home feed my little bread snappers. See? That's the way we see that. Now, on the other hand over here, there are things, as the Messiah, Jesus, points out, that, you know, you probably shouldn't have. There's some things that you probably can't afford. And when you have to pay $50 a month for this, you can't afford it. That's the bottom line. And you should be out of debt. And that's what Jesus' message was. You know, you should be out of debt. You should be the head and not the tail. And he's got a lot of neat stories and a lot of neat messages and a lot of neat philosophies in here that most of us don't pay attention to, like insurance. He said, you know, you shouldn't have insurance. And we said, well, now you don't know what you're talking about, boss. So we're going to buy insurance. And he said, you know, you don't need to pay usury and interest. And we said, no, you don't understand how to buy houses. And he said, you know, you don't need these investments in stocks and bonds. And we said, oh, no, you don't understand international finance. No, okay. So when you hear that closing question, you know, it's designed to sell you the product. We have a thing called add-on interest. I thought that's kind of a real neat one. Back in the high interest days, back in 1979, 80, 81, when interest rates were at 20, 21%, we came up with a real neat program. It was called add-on interest. Do you know what add-on interest means? Neither do I. I don't know what the hell it is. I never could work out the mathematical formula, but I can tell you what the answer to add-on interest is. Because I'm selling furniture, and I need to sell my furniture, and there's high interest rates, and there's a lot of opposition, and rightly so, a lot of opposition to people paying 21% interest. And when you tell somebody the interest rate's 21%, you know, you can just kiss that sale goodbye. So we had to come up with a different program, and so we came up with 12% interest. That's kind of neat, 12% interest. It was called 12% add-on. Now, when you did the arithmetic with this 12% add-on, its actual interest rate was 35%, I believe it was. No, it wasn't either. It was about 33%, a little bit less. The maximum rate of interest in Idaho at that time was 35%, and I was financing through the Associates Finance Company, and they're the ones that came up with this 12% add-on. Just leave it to a banker now. He'll figure out how to screw you. If there's any way to screw you, the banker will do it. So the banker comes to my aid, and he says what we need is 12% add-on, which equals 33% simple interest. And so you come into the store, and I say, well, we've got a 12% interest rate. Oh, my God, how can you afford to do that? Well, we're with the Associates. And because of our association with this wonderful finance company, we can offer you this low, low 12% add-on. I always had to see they cautioned me. Always make sure that when you tell them it's 12% interest, that you tell them it's 12% add-on interest. See, if you don't, then it's deceptive advertising. So we told everybody the truth. It's 12% add-on. And then we were taught and trained, you know, in the school. Now, if somebody says to you, what is add-on? You say, I don't know. It's a methodology for computing the interest, but I really don't know how to do that. Because, you know, if you said, well, it's 12% add-on, and they said, okay, well, show us how that works. And then I sat down and showed you how that worked, and it worked out to 33% interest. So you'd get just real uptight about that. And so I have to play dumb at that point. So, now, they showed me how to compute that, but I've forgotten now over the years, and I can't quite tell you how to do it. It's kind of a complex little thing where you're actually paying the interest without paying the principal, and you pay all the interest first, and then you pay the principal later. So that way, if you default, you've paid the interest, but you haven't bought the product, so you don't have any equitable interest at all. It's a real neat program, really designed to screw Blue and tattoo you and put money in our pocket. So that's the story on add-on interest. And so when you see APR and you see add-on and you see these little neat thingies over here, boys and girls, always tuck into your heart. Jesus told you not to practice usury and interest. It's bad for you. Okay. Now, if you want to go out and do it, well, then you know you get screwed, blue, and tattooed. You know you're the proximate cause of your own injury, and so therefore suffer with it. So we were charging 35% consumer interest. And by the way, the banks now charge, what is it, 20? Did I see one the other day, 28% interest on your credit card? I mean, kids, when I was a youngster, 6%, anything over 6% was called usury. Usury. The truth of the matter was 1% was usury, but, you know, we put a number on there, 6. Today, the banks routinely charge you 15. I mean, that's when you got a good interest rate, you know, and it's this your Discover card and you're only paying 15% interest. That's the good interest rate. Oh, my God. What's 15 divided by the rule of 72? 72 divided by 15. Doubles every 4.8 years. 4.8 years. 15% interest. Let's put it this way. Let's suppose that you owe $10,000 on your Discover card and you're making the minimum payment. And you do that for 4.8 years would be about 58 months. You do this for about 58 months, just a little under 6 years. Not as near. 5 years, just a little under 5 years. 4.8 years. That turns out to double the $10,000 to $20,000. You're going to pay back $20,000 for the $10,000 you borrowed. Isn't that just special? And that's a 15% interest, and that's the good credit card. Any idea what it's going to do to you if you're paying 28? Let's try it. Let's take $10,000. It's called the rule of 72. Can you do that? Just take 72 and divide that by the interest rate. Can you remember that? 72 divided by the interest rate of 28%. 2.5 years. When you're paying 28% interest on that credit card and you got a $10,000 balance, you're going to pay up $20,000 in 2.5 years, 30 months. Over 30 months, 30 payments, 30 months, you're going to pay these guys double. Now, boys and girls, you've got to be very, very wealthy. You got to be richer than Ted Kennedy to throw money around like that. But that's not the worst one. We got another loan over here, which is called the title loan. It's called the car title loan. And here in this state, it's 9.9% per month. Oh, my God, 9.9% per month times 12 equals 118% a year. So that means if you go down to a car title company, and let's say your car is worth $5,000. Well, no. Your car's got to be worth $10,000. To get $5,000, because they'll only lend you 50%. That's all they'll lend you, 50% of the value of the car. So they look it up and they say, oh, wow, your car is worth $5,000. And so we'll give you $5,000. They'll give you the wholesale price, what they'll do. And so they say, okay, it's $5,000. They loan you the $5,000 at 9.9% interest a month for 1 year. Which interest are you going to pay on it? Let's take $5,000 times 1.18 is $5,900. So you got to pay them $5,900 to buy back a car that's only worth $5,000. Oh, my God. And who are the only people in the society that are going to go into a place like that? The poorest, most desperate people in the society. The poorest, most desperate people are the only people that would go in there and make a loan like that. And here's the thing that really caught my earball. It was passed by our legislature when it was controlled by the Democrats. And we had a governor named Mel Carnahan, and he was a Democrat. And isn't it the Democrats that are opposed to these capitalistic, money-grubbing corporations? I mean, isn't that the story, these damn Republicans? And that's in Missouri. I don't know what they charge out in California. It's probably double up. You Californians out there, you know, you get a different world to live in. But that's what we do here in the Midwest. And we're conservative and we're nice guys. And we screw people at the rate of 118% per year. And we advertise that. I mean, we put that out there and we say, come in and borrow money, you know, today, you know, no credit checks. God, anybody that would go in there and make a loan like this doesn't have any credit. That's why he's in there. He's pawning his car is what he's doing. If he had any credit and he had any sense, he wouldn't do that. Okay, now this brings us up to a neat little story here called the car story. I ran across a guy one time. He had bought a car for, let's see if I remember the price, it was $7,000. It was back in the 80s, and the $7,000 car was 3 or 4 years old. And he was paying $350 a month, 14% interest. And if you do the arithmetic on this, you know, $350 a month, and the payment period is 36 times $350, is $12,600. So he bought a $7,000 car, and he's going to pay $12,600 for it in 36 equal monthly installments of $350 each, which is pretty normal, 14% interest. Now, this car that he bought for $7,000, he could have bought at the auto auction in Mansfield, Missouri, or Jonesboro, Arkansas, or any other auto auction anywhere in America for half that price, which is what the car dealer who bought the car paid, $3,500. The real cash value of the automobile was $3,500. He paid $7,000 for it. And he made the payments on it faithfully for 16 months, but then he got into trouble because he lost his job, and now he's 2 months behind on his payments, and now he's in danger of losing the car. And so I'm talking to this young fellow about that. And I asked him, why did you buy the car? And he said, well, because my family grew and it grew and it grew and it got big. And now my family's too big for the little Chevy Nova that I had when my wife and I were first married. And I asked him, I said, did these five children sneak up upon you suddenly overnight and overwhelm you? And he said, no, they came about one a year or every 2 years. Okay. So I said, you had a few years to plan for this, didn't you? I mean, you know, when you married this girl, you know, did it ever occur to you that maybe babies would come out of that? I don't know what young people are thinking about. I think they're all horny and they're all in heat, and they're not thinking about the real world in the future. And this fellow certainly hadn't. Five kids come along. And I asked him, I said, well, couldn't you have gone down, you know, $350 a month or your payments? You know, couldn't you have saved your money for 90 days, 3 months? Couldn't you have toughed it out, you know, with the five bread snappers in the little car for 90 days, save $350 a month, which obviously you had because you made the first three payments, and you would have had $1,000. You could have bought a $1,000 station wagon, and you could have kept your little Chevy Nova, and then your wife would have the station wagon, and you'd have the car. And he said, oh, yeah, I didn't think of that. And so now he's made 16 payments. Well, 350 times 16 is $5,600, which is $1,400 less than the $7,000 he paid. Let me ask you this, kids. If you walked into a car lot and you had $5,600 bills in your hand and you pointed to that car that had $7,000 new on the windshield and said, that one, $5,600, that one right there, and showed that salesman the $5,600, do you think he'd let you off that car lot with that $5,600 in your hand? I tell you, children, he would not. He would take the $5,600. Now, he'd talk like a monkey's uncle and try to get you to pay $7,000 for it on time with so much down, save your money. He'd tell you, let your money work for you and buy this car on time, because they make more money when they sell them on time. So if they sell it to you for cash, you get $7,000. If they sell it to you on time, they get $12,600. Got that? Okay. Would you rather sell this car today for $7,000, or would you rather sell this car today for $12,600 over 36 months? And the answer is, we'd rather sell it to you on time over 36 months. All right. Now, that being the case, would they sell it to you for $5,600? Well, shucks, kids. You're only $1,400 short. If you waited 90 days, you could save $350 a month, you know, and you'd have the full $7,000. But you know, you ought to ask for a discount when you're paying cash. I always do. It always works for me. If I walked into the car lot and I looked at a car marked at $7,000, I would say to myself, you paid $35 for it because cars have a full Keystone markup on them. Remember that story I told you? Markup, Keystone markup. All right. So they got this full Keystone markup. Now, that being the case, he's not going to sell it to you for $3,500, but he might sell it for $4,500 if he was hard up and short. Car sales are slow. He'd probably sell it for $45. I'll guarantee you he'll sell it to you for $55. No doubt in my mind. And if I had a salesman on the lot and he let some guy walk off the lot with $5,600 in his pocket, I'd fire him on the spot. I'd can him. No salesman's going to let you walk out of there with your money. You know, not if it's reasonable. And so you gotta dig your heels in and tell them, no, I'm going to pay cash. And if I don't buy it from you for $5,600 cash, then you point across the street, then I'm going to go over there with my $5,600. And you just tell that car salesman, I'm going to go to 10 car lots with $5,600 pointing at $7,000 cars. And the first one that sells me a $7,000 car for the $5,600 is the guy that's going to get the $5,600. Now, is it going to be you, or is it going to be somebody else? And he's going to say, why don't you just come right on in here, son? Let's just write up the papers. That's the way that comes down. But this guy didn't do that. So ultimately, he lost his car, the $7,000 car. And then he's got a deficiency judgment. For how much? $5,600. See, he paid $5,600. No, it's worse than that. $12,600. Let's just do that. $12,600 on my famous Sharp EL1197G3 calculator. So $12,600. Now he's paid $5,600. Remember? $7,000. Hell, he still owes the full amount of the automobile. All he's paid is the interest so far. He's been paying 16 months. He paid the interest. Now he gets a $7,000 deficiency judgment. They take the car back to the auto auction, and they auto auction it off again, and probably the same dealer buys it back, only now it isn't $7,000. He buys it back for $2,500, prices it at $5,000. You know, it's 18 months old now. I mean, that's the way that game is played, kids, and so you might as well wake up to the fact. And it's advertising that does it. It's the representation by word or deed or by printed matter or over the air or I heard it or the salesman told me, like the insurance salesman. He tells you this is a wonderful hurricane insurance policy. You don't want to go without hurricane insurance here along the Gulf Coast. But he doesn't tell you all the facts, and you buy the insurance policy, and it doesn't pay for the flooding. Well, excuse me, kids, isn't flooding a part of a hurricane? I thought that water and rain and flooding was a part of hurricane. Yeah, we pay for hurricanes, but we don't pay for the flooding. Yeah, we pay health insurance, all right, but we don't pay if you get sick. You need health insurance, but we don't pay if you're sick. What the hell are we talking about here? You know, if you people read those insurance policies, you wouldn't buy them. You know, just listen to the advertising over there. And that guy, he's a nice guy, and he's selling you something. He's selling you some air. It's called Blue Sky in business. We sell the guy a product, but we sell it with Blue Sky. And we tell you what you want to hear. Now, we're trained to listen to you first, and we listen to you. And then we pick right up on your buy signs. What is this guy's hot button? What is his buy signal? You know, these are the buzzwords that all of us salesmen are trained in. Buy signal, hot button. And by the way, if you go to the auto auction, you can buy your automobiles for half price. You know, and the public can go to those auto auctions. Just start looking around. They're a little harder to find. We got two of them around our neck of the woods here. When I want to buy a car, go to the auto auction. I have to pay cash, but I only pay half price. So I save my pennies, my nickels and dimes, until I've got $3,000 or $4,000, and I go to the auto auction and I buy a hell of a nice car. $4,000 at the auto auction buy me an $8,000 or $10,000 car. Hey, I'm running out of time, so I'm going to have to sign off here in a minute. So let me give you a reminder that you're listening, or have been listening, to The Law Hour, an editorial review. And we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Keep in mind that the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Remember that the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact discs. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.